For January the 15th, 2021, we talk about The Glass Staircase, Trackmania 2020, and we announce the 2020 Title of the Year winners. Welcome to Level 356. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meissmith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome one and welcome all. It is very hard not to begin this by talking about the insurrection, about the putsch that happened. So I will try not to go on too much about that. But man, that was weird.
It's a little bit easier because we talked about it for 15 or 20 minutes before the show started.
We did, and it was still on my mind.
Reeling and trying to comprehend a senseless situation out of the way. So now we can goof.
Yes. So anyway, I just wanted to, in case anybody was wondering, hey guys, what about that? We got that out of our system before we hopped on, but we are here to talk about games and stuff. Let's see. I usually don't lead this. I'm kind of anxious. I've got to take Dottie in to get spayed tomorrow.
Dun dun dun
dun dun dun. I have to.
Do you have like some catnip prepared as like a consolation prize for her?
Sorry about
as
your
much
uterus.
Ice cream as you can eat.
Okay,
you can have as much sex as you want.
as much ice cream as you want. Okay, as a reward, you can eat this thing, which will give you terrible, terrible diarrhea, Dottie. No, I don't have any like consolation stuff. I'm just, you know, it's she's tiny and she is baby, and she it's gonna be a surgery. I'm worried about her, the poor girl. So we will see how it goes. Everybody wish her luck. By the time you hear this, she'll be back, and probably hopefully she doesn't need to get the cone.
Any predictions on what this will do to her Shadow of the Colossus skills?
I don't know. It usually chills them out once they get this, and we'll see. She's been mellowing out anyway, but I imagine she will still want to be up and climb on me and stuff like that, which is fine. That's that is a thing that I am okay with the cat doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say, you know, just clear your schedule, plan on laying low, staying at home for a couple days while she gets over it. But we're all doing that anyway.
Yeah, no, I'm not. Where the fuck am I going to go? Come on. Oh, man. David, how about you? How are you doing? What you been up to?
Not too much. I'm slowly finalizing trying to flee the city temporarily to go spend some time with friends in Alabama.
Escape from New York.
Yeah, Sweet Home, exactly. Alabama.
Exactly. All sorts of great pop culture.
Yeah.
Now, so I put down like at least a, you know, initial like, I don't know, ante on a apartment, and now I'm you know, about to get inundated with, you know, hundreds of moving companies. So
Right.
That should be an adventure.
Play them off of each other.
Without saying the actual dollar amount, what fraction is the rent in Alabama versus New York City?
One third.
Yeah. Wow. Great. Yeah.
Nice setup.
Well, that sounds daunting. That sounds daunting to arrange in these times.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting times, but you know,
yeah,
such is life.
Yeah. So, David, since you're living in Alabama again, can I crash there for a month again?
Sure.
Awesome. I'll bring Skyrim.
I will have significantly more space there than I have here. So.
Yeah. Oh, Ben, how about you? What you up to?
Not a whole lot, you know. Corona weeks, you don't do much.
Yeah.
I bought a candle and a 1,000-piece puzzle, so that was a nice treat myself weekend sort
of
thing.
Are you my grandma?
She
likes candles and puzzles.
All right.
But also candles and puzzles are good. I like them too. So
speaking of grandmas in the last week, Dennis recorded a 30-minute conversation with my grandma and somehow shared it with the rest of the family.
Oh, that's from a while ago.
Yeah. So I got to listen to that last week too, and that was very nice. So,
oh, nice.
Thank you. Thank you, Dennis.
Oh, happy to do it.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then in other family news, my mom is babysitting for my brother this week. And so I have like ongoing bets with my brother of like what sort of things she'll do. The one that we already got correct was that she'll criticize something about his house within the first 2 hours of getting there. And she already laid on. I don't think she listens to the show, so I think we're good here. But she said, like, you don't have a space for your garbage can was one. And then I thought your living room would be bigger than this was the second one.
God. Wait. So what? Does he have some sort of like non-Euclidean garbage can that doesn't take up space?
No, it's just like out in the open, I think, and which is fine. Like mine is, I can see mine, but yeah. I think it's one of those things where I don't know if my mom means well or not, but she'll always like point out things like this when she comes and visits. Like she came to my place one time and was like, oh, your mirror is really dirty in your bathroom. You need to clean that more. And it's like
your mom is the aunt from that Geico commercial about having ants.
I feel this. I feel called out. That's why I don't have my parents around anymore. That's why they don't come over to my house.
I'm planning on calling them on Thursday this week for, you know, like relief, you know.
I love the idea, Cole, that you move closer to your parents with the express reason so that you could control that they would never come to you. If you're coming to me and I'm far away, you have to be at my house. If we're close, right. I can always just be like, no, I'll come to you.
And that was the only reason I did it, yeah.
See, you can just follow my strategy and just have never lived more than 2 years in one place for all of your adult lives.
That sounds really stressful.
Yeah.
Dennis, how about you?
I have breaking news from tonight, and I really like the cool, exciting kind, not the terrifying existential.
I was going to say that's not something I want here in today's world.
No, as of like an hour before we recorded, Barrett started rolling over.
What?
Oh.
Yeah. So wow. He's 6 weeks and 1 day, which is super early. That's cool.
I was going to say.
To be fair, that's categorized under terrifying, right?
he's officially
upside down now.
I have three mobile children.
Three mobile children. No.
But so all Luke actually rolled over at 6 weeks and Barrett is 6 weeks in a day. So we spent the evening not really celebrating the accomplishment and just telling him he needed to be more like his older brother. But no, it was a good time. I got video of it. I might, if I can get it off my phone, post it.
Nice.
Slack is always weird about posting videos. Sometimes it'll work. Sometimes it just, it'll give me an error and then the post will sit visible to only me for the next like 3 months until it clears cache.
Weird.
So I don't know what's up with that. But anyway, so Barrett's rolling over, three mobile children. And it was very cute.
My condolences or congratulations.
Yeah. Well, he's that size, the baby proportions where really rolling over is more about getting your head in the right place, and the body's just going to follow. body doesn't really have a choice once the head gets far enough.
Are you still doing night shifts?
In a way, he's also changing up his sleeping patterns, as newborns are wont to do. So I would say he probably spent like 80% of today asleep, which is glorious, but he's decided that like now-ish until 1, he's just going to be like hyper awake. But he's sleeping longer after that. Okay. So who knows? Whenever we wrap this, I might go grab baby for some late night snuggles. Because he sure as hell ain't sleeping.
Well, that's very good.
So
good.
Am I the only one who did the whole like just skip crawling thing? Just went directly from sitting to walking? Was too lazy to do in between?
Yes. Are you talking about that? I hit crawl.
I was able to levitate until I was 3. Then I hit my head, and then I wasn't able to. Yeah.
So I'll give you one weirder.
Doesn't surprise me.
My younger brother Rob would scooch on his butt, so he would sit up and then just use his like feet to pull his butt forward while sitting, and that was his version of crawling.
That's
I can respect that.
Yeah. I mean, that way you're just, if you want to sit, you're like right there.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that sounds like banter to me. It also sounds like we've got the regular-ish kind of show. We've got we're going to talk about the games we've been playing. We're going to do the grind here. We're going to talk about the Toady, the title of the year episode mm-hmm. Results for the multiplayer. Then we're going to round out with the Unboss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Ben, I'm going to go to you first.
All right. I've been playing Satisfactory some more this week.
Cool.
I've continued playing with my friend from Cincinnati. We continue to make a sweet ass factory. We've entered the coal stage of things. Not the K, but the C.
It gets easier to automate stuff there because you can set up the auto miners.
Yeah. You don't have to manually keep filling stuff for power, which is super nice. It's also like a pretty high ceiling of power. I think so far we've built like 6 altogether, 2 different coal lines feeding into 3 of them. Mm-hmm. We did some like exploring where we just tried to go to like the edge of a map. Mm-hmm. Didn't really see an ending. I'm sure one exists, but it was very impressive. The map's a lot bigger than I expected, where it's like we got to what we thought was like kind of like a cliff and would be a vista out into like nothingness. Mm-hmm. But then you look down at the ground and you're like, no, those are actual trees. Like you can jump down there and there's creatures walking around. Yeah. The one skill that I think we've developed a lot more is using conveyor belts to get up to places. Mm-hmm. So like if there's a hill and there's not like an easy way to climb it, just build a conveyor belt that goes up to the top of it and then just ride that up.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to do this kind of like pixel perfect sort of thing of trying to find like the lip of the mountain you're trying to scale and like be able to place it there.
Yeah.
But that's been satisfying, finding just kind of, there's like it kind of opens up and there's like maybe 8 different resources you can get or so. And so trying to find the odds and ends, like quartz is one where it's like quartz mm-hmm. deposits are farther away, but they exist. And we've been doing it. I know you mentioned doing it with trucks last week, Cole. We've been doing it more interesting where you just build a long ass conveyor belt that goes mm-hmm. back to your base and then keeping storage there. And so it's somewhat satisfying to see like a conveyor belt go to the horizon and these little pink quartz crystals like mm-hmm. coming down from there. And the games,
and then mysteriously they stop and you're like, oh boy, I've got to go check and see what the problem is.
Check the line, yeah,
yeah.
With the quartz in particular, we set it up and we just put some biomass in it and let it go, but it hasn't ran out yet. So eventually we will have to go back and like hook up lines and stuff. But we also got, I think, sulfur going, and then there's a rock. I forget what it's called. It's like similar to copper, but it has a different name. Mm-hmm. But we found a deposit for that, but there's like rocks on top of it, so you can't hook up a miner to it. You have to put up like portable ones. Mm-hmm. I don't know if, I think one of the things we're making right now is like gunpowder. So we're guessing that you eventually like blow up the rocks and then you can access it maybe. Yeah. But we'll see. Anyway, the game's a whole bunch of fun to play with another person. I think I have like a solo world that I built on my own. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like a different, maybe a different strategy of playing it. Like on that one, I haven't gotten to coal yet, but what I've done is I built 2 completely wasteless lines to make mm-hmm. advanced plates and rotors, I think.
Yep.
So I did this over the weekend where I kind of like had a notebook paper and was like drawing a sketch of a diagram where, you know, like so to like make an advanced plate, for example, you need like a certain number of iron plates and you need a certain number of like, I think, rods. Mm-hmm. And it's so in this iteration, I'm paying attention to like, oh, I need like 30 of these per minute. I need 40 of these per minute. So how can I set up like constructors behind that produce that many and then mm-hmm. make sure everything's getting an even amount? So I did that with 2 resources. So on the plus side, it's very like aesthetically pleasing that there's no stoppages in the lines, it's steadily producing stuff. That's cool. But on the downside, compared to my other game, is like, oh, I need to pick up an iron rod. Well, I need to make that myself. Like, I don't have anything that's like constructing that. Whereas like in the one that I'm doing with my friend, we have like a you know, this giant, you know, monster of a assembly line making these things. But at the very end of it, where everything's feeding into these big constructors, we have a splitter, and then we have it going into this giant, like, 5-high storage container thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So if there's anything that's slowing down or whatever, that'll just go to storage. And we can just, so we can just, like, walk over and grab whatever resource we need. Or it's like, oh, we need some plates. We'll just grab 100 real quick from here.
Yeah, yeah. And if it ever gets full, or if you need it, you can just take the stacks, or you can run an output from that over to whatever input that you need. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's interesting to see the different play styles and kind of how the trade-offs with them. But yeah, that's like a really fun game to play socially. And again, I can't emphasize enough, it's really fun to play with multiple people as well, because you get more accomplished. So it's like a great example of, like, you know, like when you play a co-op board game, sometimes they miss the mark where it's like, it doesn't feel like, it feels like it's friendly just to be friendly, maybe. It doesn't feel like XCOM's a good example of not doing that, where it's like everybody has their own role and everybody's contributing or whatever. Mm-hmm. But this Satisfactory is like that, like XCOM, where it's like, it feels like you're getting much more done than you would by yourself. And that's a very good thing. So
more hands makes less work.
Yeah, yeah. So that game is really awesome. I'm really impressed by it. It's still, I think it's still in early access, but I'm impressed by it the same way that I'm impressed by Factorio, where it's like, I just think it's nuts that it's keeping track of all these different resources, all of these different lines, that it can render it on the fly, whichever direction you look, you know, and doesn't break or doesn't chug or anything like that.
The fact that it renders as far as it does, and like, you know, my machines never got that impressive, but like when you go and look at like example machines, like people like showing off their factory planner or whatever, the fact that all of it moves without any apparent performance hit, there must be some kind of deal with the devil that happened.
Satisfaustery?
I like it.
Can't recommend that game enough. I'm sure eventually, probably once you've like built all the things, maybe you're kind of like done with it, but I also have a game with another friend from Cincinnati who we got the game for, who's like jumped in a couple of times in our world, but I helped him get him set up and like walk him through the tutorial. So that's like another thing that's, I guess, tricky, is like everybody kind of has their own world, or everybody like will play a solo game kind of, but then, you know, like when you get into pair worlds, there's like a dedicated one person who's hosting it. So it makes it a little bit tricky, where it's like the other person can't just start off in that world and like make changes while
work on it. It can only work when both of you are there.
Yeah.
Or so that's something the host that, is. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something that like Rust has that this game doesn't, or like Raft doesn't have it either, where it's like, you are the host instead of it being outside of your guys' control.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, that's all I got to say about that game. Still great. Cool. I have one other game to talk about, which I started playing yesterday, and maybe you guys saw me playing it before, is I got XCOM Chimera Squad.
And
started playing that. Yeah, it's really great. It's XCOM, so you know.
But it's not. It's like totally XCOM flipped on its head.
Well, yeah, so I know you mentioned this too with like the breaching behavior and stuff like that. Honestly, it still feels like XCOM. It's just, instead of it being a single massive sprawling level where you get in a situation and fight people and then you like kind of wander around the map to the next area to fight people, instead of being like that, they just streamlined it. So it's like, you're going to go to this room, you're going to fight everyone, we're going to take you to the next room, then you fight everyone there. And there's no in-between section where you're like trying to search or explore. And I'm fine with that. I like it a whole bunch right now. The breaching system, I know you've already like talked about this. I'll do like a little bit of reminders. So the breaching system is like the order in which you send people into a room. Everybody gets a free shot at the aliens who are in the room. Also, people have like special abilities they can unlock. So the person with the drone, could, instead of like breaching a door, what they could do is they could send out their drone when they run in so that everyone's targeted, so you get better hit percentages on them. I don't know, there's people with explosives who might be able to do other things. I haven't ran into too many other ones. There's like another person with a drone's ability where they can heal everybody when they breach. But anyway, it's basically like, you could think of it as like kind of like a quick time event. It's not exactly like that, but like everyone takes a shot at one another, and then it's regular XCOM where it's like, and then it's, as Dennis mentioned before, instead of it being everybody on your side takes a turn, then everyone on their side takes a turn. It's staggered every other. And it's not to its detriment, because there's mechanics that can either increase where you are in the line, and there's mechanics that can slow other people down. And so you can kind of use that to the ideal strategy is that you have each person kill the next alien whose turn it is, so that it skips over them and you, it's only your turn, essentially.
The thing that is most in common with the previous XCOM from a mechanic standpoint or from a strategy standpoint is the best tactic is just always to make sure an alien never gets to take a turn.
Yeah.
Like it's ultimately a big puzzle game on how can I prevent you from ever actually taking a turn.
Yeah. The upgrading and the game mechanics of the game are all good as always, but they're completely different. Previous XCOMs, there's not really the same base building mechanic like there is in XCOM Enemy Unknown, but what instead you're in a dedicated base. Maybe it's reminiscent of The Wire season one, where it's like you have this like office area where everyone's like working in, and there's different sections there. There's one new mechanic that they have is if one of your people gets downed, you can have a robot replace them. So it's a little bit different than the previous version. I think before it's like you could have a robot deployed, you know, alongside your other humans.
Yeah.
And they kind of operate differently. It's basically like androids are replacements here. Mm-hmm. If somebody goes down, so you still have four people and you're not like without party members. There's other stuff. The other mechanics that they have is they have like an investigation sort of economy or like intel economy. They have a city map that you look at, and that's where you can do different missions. But then at each area of the city map, it's like a 3x3 grid. You can install like support groups, I think is what they're called. I don't know if that's the right one or not, but it's basically a group of agents or whatever who will focus on a certain thing in that area. So it might be decreasing like crime and making it so that that's not as hot. It might be like making money, or it might be making Illyrium, which is used for like researching things. In kind of specialized areas. And then on top of that, they have these like actions for different areas that you can do based on like how many support groups that you have. And the support groups have three levels, and that kind of determines how effective they are. So like first tier, they might give you like $20. Second tier, they might decrease like the panic in the city and give you $20. And then third tier might do something baller or something like that.
So even post aliens, we still have civil asset forfeiture.
Well, if I remember correctly, I think it's the intel ones. Like, those are objectively the right ones to upgrade first because that is the currency with which you unlock them. It's almost like it's like, you know, buffs to your XP game at the at the beginning of any RPG.
Exactly. Yeah. So far, I've tried to do intel as much as possible, and then use that to invest in more intel. But I was rushing to get all nine places occupied with a group, which I just did today. And so I think that unlocks an action where you can decrease like the overall like city panic level. Like each area has a panic level, and then the overall city has like a panic level. But that like has hardly increased at all this game. And then maybe that tunnels into one other thing is this game doesn't feel hard yet. It doesn't feel like a typical XCOM game where you start off and you're like, oh shit, things are going bad and they're getting worse and I need to like turn this around. I haven't felt like that sort of feeling. Like it feels like I have things pretty under control and I just need to like keep everybody training and like buying stuff for them. And like, it seems okay. Like I genuinely
asked this out of curiosity and not with any judgment. What difficulty level are you playing on?
The normal one.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. But I mean, that's what I played the other one as well.
Yeah. I felt the same way at normal, and I felt like there was a marked jump up.
Okay.
Step up.
Go on.
I was going to say, do you think the difference between the levels is more pronounced in this game than in previous games, Dennis?
It's hard. Like, it felt more pronounced, but then again, I also like have less mastery of this game. So it could just be that I haven't figured it out as much as I've figured out the other XCOM games, and so it feels like a bigger jump.
Gotcha.
Okay. Like the first time I went up from normal to whatever one step above normal is, they name it different every time, which I don't understand. Just pick one. But the first time I made that jump, it felt like, oh god, that was a huge jump in difficulty. I you know, how does anyone survive here? Yeah. And then you figure out all the kind of ways to cheese it and survive, and then it doesn't feel as, like as big a deal.
Yeah.
So I think it's more a function of where I'm at on the game that it feels like a big jump than how big it actually is.
Okay. Were you going to say, Dippin?
I was going to say, I love the idea of the breaching abilities. Like, I love the idea that apparently your team has a medic who, I don't know, learned, you know, medicine on the battlefield, and now he can only render first aid if someone's shooting at him.
I like the idea that like this is easier than XCOM or XCOM 2. Like, I think that that's a feature, you know, because those are so intimidating, and like if you botch a run, you know, it's you know, gone forever. Like, goodbye to those 20, 30 hours or whatever. Like, having like the good like entry ramp up kind of thing to give somebody the flavor just seems good to me. I like that is the fact about this.
Well, I would say it's not necessarily easier. It's just less sprawling. Like, there are less ways that you can just get lost and completely off course and not know what the hell you're supposed to be doing or what the hell the right next thing is. It's like the choicest XCOM bits distilled down for you.
Yeah.
I think it's just flat out easier, because like I remember playing XCOM and this brought back flashbacks that is like I remember I had to save scum that game to get through some of the levels. Like, you know, it's not like something I want to do, but it's like, well, either have half my team die and then start a new game, or I do this. And so I'm glad that I haven't done the same sort of thing in this game. This game, it's like if someone gets wounded, it's like, okay, that's fine. Like, they'll be out for 2 days and like heal up, and then I'll do 2 more missions and it's fine.
Yeah.
I think that makes for a better gameplay experience for my personal case, but maybe I just suck. So,
I still like the idea of, I feel like XCOM likes, should just institutionalize save scumming, like just have a built in rewind mechanic.
Yeah. Mm. Everyone else calls it an undo button, but XCOM, you know, forces in a couple extra steps to seem hardcore. It's like, no one's, well, unless you're setting it to Iron Man, no one's actually, you know, hampered by not having an undo button, but, it's all about the image.
I mean, especially considering they use the seed, like it's the one game where doing that to a significant degree isn't cheating.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And I'm not sure if your people can permadie or not. I assume probably they can, but what happens if they drop to zero health is they're bleeding out on the floor.
It's crazy that I've forgotten this.
So you can, when they're bleeding out on the floor, I think you either have to like stabilize them or complete the mission before. I think it's like it's like D&D where it's like they have like 4 rounds and then they're like permadead.
I'm remembering. So exactly what you said. So they die. You need to stabilize them. If you fail to stabilize them, the entire game ends.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So it's also not like, oh, you've lost them for the rest of the game. It's like the game over.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Your teammates can't die in so much as the entire universe will die along with them.
I see.
That's a lot of responsibility.
There's another cool mechanic they added that's pretty seamless, where you can melee, like subdue a person if you're next to them, and it does guaranteed 2 bars of like damage. And it keeps them alive. It doesn't kill them. And then the benefit of that is that gives you a percentage chance to get intel from them at the end of the round. I don't know if that's like you're dissecting them or if you're interrogating them, but one way or another,
one than the other.
XCOM answer is dissecting.
Just depends on the order you do it.
So that's a pretty cool mechanic. So it kind of incentivizes you to try and do that. It also makes it feel less bad if it's like, oh, this first person shot him and they only have 1 bar left. Instead of that being like a failure and be like, man, if they only got 1 more, you're like, oh, that opens it up so that I can kill them for like intel. There's also some of the class upgrades seem kind of busted, because like one of the upgrades is every person you kill is actually subdued instead. So you can like fast track intel if you want that. But I opted for something else. I think it's like they have an ability where this is one of the new classes. This is like an alien who, and it's, I guess it's similar to an old one where it does like mind control to people.
Oh, yeah.
difference that they added is they added this concept of a network. So the idea is, like, when you mind control someone, it's only for a round, but they're considered on the network, like on this alien neural network or whatever.
Okay.
And so there's a couple different things you can, like, one of the abilities he has is your aim and damage increase based on how many people are on the network in the in that round. So, like, the person scales higher and higher as the round goes on. And then the other one is, like, they have an ability where they can damage everybody who's on the network, which is, like, a sweet finishing move where it's like, okay, so I have, you know, like two turns per each round, I've, like, gotten two people on the network, and then at the end I'm just going to do two damage to everyone and finish everyone off. Yeah, I don't know. It's a lot of fun. It's an XCOM game, so it's if you like any of the previous ones, you're going to like this. I haven't noticed any bugs at all, hardly. So I think any sort of wrinkles they might have had with rolling it out have probably been patched over by now.
No bugs except for the Chrysalids. There we go. Sorry. Sound it out. Sound out the word. I played XCOM 1. Damn it.
yeah. So I'm probably gonna play that, like, as soon as supper, because it's very. I played it till like 1 or 2 in the morning. Like, great.
Ben, I would love to watch you play.
Sure. Oh yeah, that's right. You're on night duty. Yeah. All right. We can make that happen tonight.
Cool. Was that all you had? Satisfactory and XCOM Chimera Squad.
Two good games. I'm in a good place gaming wise right now.
Nice.
You got a cover for me.
I will do mine. Now I only have two. One of which I streamed over the weekend. It is a survival horror game. It's an indie horror game called The Glass Staircase. This is available on itch.io, and it's made by, who's the developer? Puppet Combo is the name of it. This kind of got on my radar a year or so ago, like when it was in early access. This intentionally is kind of like aping the look and feel and style of like PS2 survival horror. Kind of the idea is you're playing as this series of girls that have been captured by this cult and are being given tasks to do for them. And as you are doing these tasks around the mansion, you find diaries that explain what is going on. It takes place like in the early 20th century. Like, there's a doctor who came back from World War I, changed by what he saw, and he is making deals with the devil and such, and creating machinery that is dragging cultists in, like, you know. It is kind of intentionally styled after like Italian zombie horror movies as well, to a certain degree. Not a lot of action until the very end. It is not until you get to the last girl. Spoilers, all of the girls except for the last one die. It's not until her, when you are making an escape attempt, that you actually get a rifle and there are like enemies and bosses and stuff like that. That's a little bit where it falls down, because though this is a short game, it is kind of trial and error-y. You know, you die pretty quickly on some of the bosses and enemies, and they put you in tough situations. And problem is, they are very stingy with checkpoints. So it was a lot of, redoing stuff, until I, figured out what I needed to do and where, and repeating content is not that fun. But I would still say that, like, this as a, you know, 2-3 hour indie horror game, like, it is probably one of the best or better of those that I've seen. And I would recommend people, like, check it out. If you didn't have it all spoiled for you when I streamed it.
So do you think the stingy saves and stuff, was that a attempt to kind of ape the classic survival horror games? Or do you think that's just maybe poor decisions?
I think that maybe it wasn't playtested especially great. Sure. Maybe they wanted to make it feel difficult or more high stakes. If they were aping classic survival horror, there would be like save points that you go to. This is just like literal checkpoints as you reach certain parts of the story.
That reminds me of Walking Dead season one, where it's like you spend the first like X chapters just talking to people, and then there's a random kill like a dozen zombies coming at you. And it's like, man, if people aren't used to shooting games, this is kind of unfair.
Yeah, yeah, and it's good that they stopped doing that in the later seasons. Yeah, that's the glass.
You just not fight zombies in the later games.
It usually like the gun combat is dealt with for you. It's more about like making choices about when and where to fight.
Okay.
Yeah. Any other questions about the glass staircase? It's hard to say too much about it without like revealing particular things that you see in the game.
Fair enough.
Yeah. The other thing I've been playing is Assassin's Creed.
Ooh, which one?
Which one?
No, just Assassin's Creed. Why are you waiting for more?
Oh, that's right. You're playing the first one?
Yeah.
the game that doesn't really have that much game in it.
There's game there. It's a weird game, you guys.
Yeah.
So we played Grand Theft Auto Vice City for Watch Out for Fireballs, and that left me with a little bit of an open world game bug, and I was like, every Assassin's Creed is probably too long, but I remember Assassin's Creed 1 is really short. And I can probably get some of that filled in there. I forgot how different this was compared to the Assassin's Creed 2 trilogy, which is the one that I have the most kind of experience with.
It's definitely leaning on the climbing mechanics as being like the main centerpiece of the game.
Yeah, like in a way, it feels like a tech demo kind of deal. Obviously, the huge crowds. You've got the climbing. There's really like not much in the way of mechanics outside of climbing and fighting. Like there are the collectibles and stuff, but like there's no money system, and there's no like there's not really much you can do to like, you know, improve your character. Like you're not buying or finding new armor and stuff like that. Like so many things that I come to associate with Assassin's Creed didn't come until 2. And so, like, what you're left with in Assassin's Creed 1 is the climbing and fighting, but also this wild structure where you're given the target, and then you're told, hey, go and find the, you know, go and talk to the Assassin Bureau when you get to one of the cities in the Holy Land, Jerusalem, Damascus, or Acre. And like go and talk to them, and they'll like give you a couple of hints about like where to look, but otherwise you have to scout the city by going to the viewpoints, go and do these little kind of like investigation missions, which yes are either the like intimidation, pickpocketing, informant, or eavesdropping. Like it's all roughly, you know, those same things in escalating difficulty as you go through the game. But like when you do those things, you get different pieces of information about the kill. And when you go after the actual target, I forgot how varied those like situations are. Like it's not just like get into a stronghold and then like find this person and kill them and then get out. Like, you know, a later one is like a person that you're going after is this scholar who is ordering a burning of all the books in Damascus. And that's like
the exact example I thought of.
Yeah. And like you go and like you see him, and you know, he does his whole big evil speech, blah blah blah. And then instead of like killing one of them, you have to go and stop like a number of the scholars who are out in the city having like gathered up these books until you get the main guy to come out. Like I did not remember this kind of variety in the game, and like I actually am kind of here for it. Something that is kind of disappointing, and you can kind of see that like, oh, this is like really early on in open world games, and like Ubisoft's, you know, didn't really know what they were doing like information economy wise, but like as you find out these pieces of information, which is like, okay, we have, these guards take a break at this particular time of day, or there's this scaffolding over here. There's no place where that intel is actually like aggregated for you. And when you go to actually do the mission, you have to like remember that this is that that's the kind of thing that you heard. And so, you know, you go and you do, and there's only like a bare minimum, like you can actually like get all of the, all of these, you know, little hints by going and doing this intel to make the actual kill go more smoothly, which I think is neat. I just wish that there was a little bit more variety in the things that you did to get that intel. And I wish that it was more like discoverable. Like, I don't know, what I want is like the Hitman games, where all of that goes in and becomes part of like your pathfinding in the actual interface of the game.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Why is this game over like playing like Black Flag or something like that?
I have kind of this notion that I'm gonna at least try all the games in the series. Like I've got the Ezio collection already installed on the PS2.
And wait, you're not coming to them fresh, are you?
No. I played Assassin's Creed 2 Brotherhood and Revelations right very close to when they released.
Okay, I was just saying, yes. you got, like, at least in my experience, the really good ones.
Yeah. No, like, those are under my belt.
Yeah. I'm a big proponent, like, I think after the Ezio stuff, this series kind of went majorly downhill.
Not Black Flag, though.
Also, the 3 set in America might ring kind of weird right now.
Probably, yeah. So... I don't know. Like, that's why I say, like, I just want to try. Like, I would, you know, I've got kind of a thing for exploring these cities. And I think it'd be like, I never played the one set in Paris and the one set in London. And like, even if those games are bad, I would like to like tool around and like mess around with it a little bit.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Is it like, Michelangelo is in the mix somewhere, right? Or, Da Vinci, Da Vinci's in the mix somewhere.
Da Vinci's in 2 in Brotherhood. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
I just find these games incredibly depressing to remember, like, yeah, there was a time when the Assassin's Creed games actually had unique content and weren't just like another, you know, action game clone.
Hmm.
I'm fine with it either way, as long as it's like well done. Like, I liked Odyssey, even though it was like, you know, not historic, not grounded in like history as much as the other games, but it was still a fun open world game.
Yeah.
And I thought the things that were set up there were good, but but I'm also fine with the first one, where it's like more grounded in history and more grounded in like making a realistic depiction of the city. Like, that can be cool, but I'm just surprised that this is what you thought of for an open world game.
Yeah,
that's what you're jonesing for.
I just wanted one that was short, and those games by and large are very they're spicy when it comes to length, right? And yeah, like, good.
Here's a memory of the first game is, you know, like I said, there's not a ton of game in the game. Like, it is very focused and does kind of the tech demo, as you said, idea that that it had very well. Mm-hmm. But I remember getting to the end of that game and, you know, kind of jumping in there being absolutely, you know, nothing to do, but I wanted more of the world. And so I went online and I started trying to find people that would race me from point to point and like, let's use a stopwatch next to us to try to get from point A to point B. But of course there's no reliable way to time your start and finish, or at least that I had access to at the time.
Yeah.
I know speedrunners be like, oh, you just use this or whatever.
Right.
But it was just like, yeah, once you were through those 9 missions, the game was like, all right, see ya.
Mm-hmm.
Like, bye. Thanks for coming.
But like, it's 9 missions and it's like 15 hours and like, it's focused and it doesn't need to have, you know, it doesn't have all this bloat that kind of, I think after specifically Brotherhood started kind of creeping in a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, and also like, I played the majority of this after the putsch last Wednesday. And I wanted to turn my brain off and not think about much of anything. And that was, you know, that ended up being
that's why you go to Ubisoft to turn your brain off.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's like with an open world game, part of the fun is feeling like you can inhabit the world.
Yeah.
And I think bloat or kind of just lots of stuff to do is a part of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that, you know, it can definitely be done in a weird, not great way, but
yeah.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Combat is frustrating. I am so, you know, and I'm even noticing this in Assassin's Creed 2, like the free flow combat that they introduced in Brotherhood specifically, that is so necessary to make this series work and not just rely on counters specifically. in order to make any kind of progress in a fight.
I also like the common thread in these games where being in the Animus is the only part of the game that's good. And then when you get out of it and whatever like side story they have going on, it's like, this is so boring.
Yeah. You know what? I'm kind of into the conspiracy stuff on the, like in the present day kind of thing. I don't know if that's just me being contrarian.
I'll say I like the idea of it. Like the conceit is really cool. I have not played a game where it's been executed in an interesting way.
It's also
they need to commit to it. Like my understanding was the original pitch was like a trilogy where the first two set it up and then the third one is no Animus at all.
Yeah.
Say that again.
No, I was going to say, like, spoiler alert for the end of Assassin's Creed 1, but doesn't it end with him seeing the Animus, like, symbols or whatever in the real world?
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's the bleeding effect. He has the eagle sight because he is, spoilers, he is a descendant of those who came before. Yeah.
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 Yeah, and, yeah, I feel like if they're going to do it, that's what they need to do. And they probably also need to commit to, like, the assassins being the bad guys.
I don't agree with that.
You don't think, like, I feel like that's what the entirety of the non-Animus, like, sequences are basically implying.
I mean, I don't know. The Templars are explicitly seeking the artifacts to control humanity.
Maybe the assassins being also the bad guys, because at the end of the first game, your head assassin, again, spoilers for a however many year old game, but mm-hmm. the head assassin winds up being a bad guy, as in affiliated with the Templars. But I mean,
yeah. So I'm trying to think here. I had something I was going to say, but then I forgot it.
Much about a game you played not to think.
one thing about like the modern day stuff, or you know, like even the stuff in the past, because you know it's a story about spies, assassins and stuff like that, like it's really quaint going back to like, let's say, like pre-2017 conspiracy stuff, because like our world right now is so defined by conspiracy theories and the people who believe them and the people who exploit them to kind of maintain a grip on power. And so doubt and disinformation, you know, to get people to behave the way that they want to, et cetera. Like in a way, conspiracy theories have like never been less frivolous, but like going back to something from like pre-2017, it's a little bit like watching King of the Hill and saying like, oh, Dale Gribble would definitely be like a huge QAnon guy, but like and like he was that version of it, but he was like this friendly, quirky, goofy conspiracy theory guy, you know, who like was a JFK assassination truther guy, and like, you know, it used to be that was a major thing, but it's just kind of fun and cute now. And Assassin's Creed is a little bit like that. Like, oh, what if everybody bad in history was a member of this, you know, of this Templar order who was trying to, and like, what if there were bad guys and good guys is like a quaint thing that this is playing with now that I'm appreciating, kind of getting back into and inhabiting. Because separating entirely from conspiracy theory would be too healthy for me. So not going to do that. But yeah, Assassin's Creed. It's funny. If you try and do like any search for a thing about Assassin's Creed, just the game that is called that, is literally the last thing that ever comes up.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah. Let's see. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so I have been playing Trackmania, and that's it this week. So I'll be pretty quick. Like the game remains amazing and just really fun to play. And I think I talked about it's almost like pulling the lever on a slot machine every time you start from the beginning of a level, because they're all in 40-second chunks. They're all really high octane, and every time you start, it's like, this could be the one where I get the perfect run. And it very much has that effect. And that kind of 40-second intervals also makes it highly interruptible, which is good for my life right now.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I've continued enjoying the hell out of it. I've continued mapping, and that's a lot of fun. And spent as much time in the editor as I have racing. But I have also gone and started looking at like high tier play for the game.
Okay.
And it is like a whole different game again. So I started linking videos in our Slack, and I'll try to describe this, but it is just mind blowing the way people do things in this game that I just never conceived of as possible. You know, there's a track where if you jump out of control in a specific way that hits a wall and then hits a checkpoint in a way that one of your wheels goes through the checkpoint, but the rest of your car is backwards, you can then go the opposite direction that you're supposed to and jump down a level and skip a large portion of the track.
It's speedrun strats. It's like people breaking Super Mario 64 or Ocarina of Time.
Exactly. And like all racing games are speedrunning games, but this is the speedrunning game of racing games.
Right. Yeah.
and like, you know, another map where there's like this crazy impossible jump where you have to have an insane amount of speed and then land in the perfect way that hits a pylon and flips your car around and then has you going the right direction. Like just people finding this stuff is incredible. I think the thing that makes it extra fun is having played through the levels and been, you know, been like, I wonder if you could do that. And then you look it up and it's like, yeah, everyone totally does that.
Oh, that's the main strat. Like,
that's the main way you go.
Yeah, it's been weeks since they did anything else. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I know this is meaningless without video to back it up. But the final one I wanted to call out was there's a level or there's like a tile in the game that puts downforce. It's like downward rockets on your wheels.
Okay.
And it helps you like stick to the track in like weird, awkward turns. So you can do like a turn that is slanted away from the way it's turning without sliding off.
Okay.
So it's meant to make you stickier. Well, what people do is they'll hit that
spoiler
tile.
Alert.
Yeah.
That's a joke about car design.
But people will crash in such a way that flips their car over after they've hit that tile, and now that downforce is upforce, and they use that to just like fly through a significant portion of the level.
Oh my god.
Just ridiculousness. So I've had as much fun watching Trackmania as I have playing Trackmania. And I'm nowhere near being ready to start trying these crazy exploits.
Does it have to be on a particular map, or are they doing this on like the actual developer created ones?
These are like the official maps.
Okay.
I've found. And I would bet you, well, some of it I think is intentional. Some of it I think is unintentional.
Yeah.
And the line is probably the stuff that I've spotted and gone, huh, I wonder if you can do that. That's probably in there on purpose. The stuff that actually goes into making the world records that I'm like, oh, I never even thought about trying that. it's probably the stuff that the developer didn't either.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really incredible to watch. And I've been Trackmania-ing nonstop.
Nice.
Since last week. So yeah, that's that is me. One short one, but just if you look up Trackmania videos, there is some cool stuff to watch, like any speedrunning videos.
Nice. Very good. And you mentioned the interruptible part. That is so huge. Mm-hmm. So huge mm-hmm. in games.
You're never so invested in a run that you can't hit escape and go do something else.
Yeah. David, how about you?
Honestly, not a whole lot. Just been continuing to grind on Nioh 2.
Cool.
So I'm to the point where I'm not sure how things sync up to Nioh 1, because a character that I'm fairly sure shows up in that game just died.
Now, when has death ever mattered?
Yeah, you know. Yeah, one of those things. Also, I'm starting to come to the conclusion that the character you're playing is just, I don't know, some sort of like psychopath or something like that. Or I don't know, it's, you know, your character is canonically mute, and never really shows any particular engagement with, like, you know, the events of the cutscenes where, you know, you're just going around and, like, slaughtering people, and I don't know, it's just, it's really weird sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if that's what it's going for, but it almost seems like, you know, I don't know, some sort of, like, anime assassin, you know, motif where your character is just kind of, like, you know, completely just there for the ride.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that is usually the result of a, that is usually the result of a silent protagonist. Grand Theft Auto 3 versus Vice City.
Yeah, I wonder what percentage of video game heroes could, like, technically be classified as a psychopath.
Oh,
probably a significant portion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any cool missions, any cool bosses you faced in Neo 2?
So, one actually that was really cool just for being very different is I just completed a side mission where you can recruit kind of the similar idea to, like, the co-op partners in a Soulsborne game.
Mm-hmm.
Except that they're computer controlled.
Okay.
And there's, you know, ones are actual players that set them, you know, kind of opt into this, but then there's also ones that are developer created.
Okay.
And in one of the side missions, shortly before the final boss, which in a lot of the side missions, they're not so much bosses as they are, there'll be, like, a series of waves of enemies you have to fight all at once, and then one, like, much more powerful enemy version of a newer enemy.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to point out that a series of waves that you have to fight all at once is a bit paradoxical.
Oh, you know, you have to fight in one go, I guess. Yeah, I should say. And so this one, shortly before that, there's a spirit you can recruit that is unique in that it's only equipped with a shirt and some pants, and you know, isn't even armed. You know, just all it can do is, like, punch enemies, and you know, is modeled to look like a little kid. But then if you fight through the you know, waves of enemies without this, like, completely defenseless partner getting killed, the final enemy is one of the yokai, is basically the a yokai that in Japanese mythology is, like, the ghost of a mother who's grieving over their dead child. And so the boss just, like, you don't have to fight. They'll just, like, thank you for reuniting them with their child, and you win the mission.
Oh.
The mouse that scares the elephant.
Yeah. So that's probably the most interesting one so far. Just, you know, kind of sort of an anti-boss fight. Mm-hmm. There was also kind of a interesting one that is you basically invade this kind of samurai stronghold that is a group of samurai that specialize in, like, riflery.
Okay.
And so all throughout it, the level is really kind of specializing in, you know, enemies that, like, you know, you constantly have to be watching for, you know, where someone set up on a sniper perch and will start shooting at you, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final enemy is, you know, someone that, like you, has the ability to kind of shift into a half yokai form. And in this case, it's they gain like one wing and can sort of fly around. And so they've got a lot of neat abilities where they can kind of fly around and, you know, take pot shots at you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a lot of, you know, switching between, you know, fighting them and then like having to make use of cover, those sorts of things.
Okay. Huh, that's different.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's, yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of things. It kind of, it seems like it's gotten into a rhythm of alternating between human bosses, which are much more, you know, dual mechanics, and yokai bosses, which are, you know, kind of more conventional, like, Dark Souls bosses. So, like, right after that one is a character that's apparently supposed to be a chariot yokai, but okay, is actually just like a cat lady, booby lady, with fiery wheels that attacks you.
Default option, yeah.
Yeah, you know, as you do. It's kind of by far the most annoying enemy in the game is the wheel monk, which is basically a monk's head whose hair is tied to a flaming wheel and just like a wagon wheel and just kind of rolls around and breathes fire at you.
Okay.
And unfortunately, this boss fight is kind of, you know, oops, all wheel monks. Because it is unfortunately just some of the most annoying mechanics in the game, you know, all rolled into one boss. So that's kind of too bad, but.
Huh.
You know, what are you going to do?
I love how many of these yokai are just, you know, monsters that I would recognize from basically any video game or from 30 years of playing video games. It's like, oh, yeah, the Burning Wheel one, the Wan Yu Do. Yeah, cool. Yeah, no, that one. Yeah, I know exactly. That. Yeah. It's a boss now? Sweet. You got the promotion?
Hey, you know, 30 years is a lot of, dedication to a company.
Now, man.
I think the one thing I am seeing from this that's definitely a rough edge is I think there's a lot of areas where they didn't put enough effort into, for lack of a better word, like making the game fair. And I guess I'd kind of, you know, do kind of the air quotes fair, you know, sort of the Dark Souls fair type thing. For example, one of the things that's really frustrating is there's no any time an enemy can use any one of their abilities, or you know, has the opening to use one of their abilities, there's absolutely nothing keeping them from doing it.
Okay.
So, you know, there's not, so that results in things where, like, for example, you can sneak up and backstab an enemy and they'll instantly go into performing a grab attack on you.
Ooh.
Because, you know, once you backstab them, their AI is, you know, back to combat mode.
Mm.
Or it's, you know, similarly, there'll be, you know, say like out of key and so like stun, but the second that stun wears off, they can instantly go into like one of their super attacks.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's a thing where it's not, you know, it's not exactly that it's cheating, but it doesn't seem well thought out in terms of like putting some sort of, you know, control on those things.
Yeah.
Similarly, like actually one of the best examples of this is the enemy that I mentioned that's kind of the grieving mother. Sort of seems like, I don't know if this is in the original lore, but at least in this is kind of drawing some of the Banshee inspiration, and so has a scream attack that just drains all of your ki and, you know, puts you into like a temporary stun. And so from that point on, you're stunned, and there's nothing in the AI keeping it from, you know, using one of its, you know, attacks that can one shot you.
Mm.
So yeah, so
at that point, so a stun might as well be an insta kill.
Right, exactly. And there's, you know, there's a lot of other things where, like, for example, this isn't probably something that's objectively wrong, but the game, at least to a certain degree, encourages you to, you know, switch between the high, low, and medium stances. But the thing that's frustrating is the combos. So, like, your heavy attack combo or your light attack combo, you know, will all have different numbers of attacks in the combos in different stances.
Oh.
So it makes it so, like, you either need to, you know, perfectly keep track in your mind what stance you're in, or only fight in one stance. Otherwise, you'll just be, you know, messing up your combo timing.
Hmm.
And it's a thing where, like, I don't know. To me, it feels like kind of fighting game wankery.
Yeah, it's a lot of information to keep in your head and deploy very quickly, like in the middle of, you know, switching from combo to combo. Yeah.
Right. And I think the problem is, I think it's things where it just doesn't add to the game. You know, it just, to me, comes across as, like, difficulty and complexity for the sake of having difficulty and complexity.
People want it. People like the high ceiling on it.
Yeah, definitely the developers think that.
Well, I mean, just the people that I know who like Souls-like games, who like that complexity, you know, I feel like that's
the antithesis of Souls-like games. Hey. Like, that, you know, I feel like that's kind of the genius of most Souls games, is the fact that the actual controls are very simple.
Yeah.
And the game is entirely based upon not the controls, but the intelligent use of, you know, a small number of fairly simple abilities.
It contains multitudes, and people go to a bunch of them for different reasons, because so many have tried different things. But Neo 2, do you feel like you're drawing close to the end, or are you just kind of gumming on it?
I think I'm actually probably somewhere between half to like two thirds of the way through.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm to the point where everything is starting to fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of seems to be to that point of the story.
Yeah, like an end of a second act kind of thing.
Yep.
I can't tell if you're talking about the end of the game as intended or the end of playing the game.
A little from column A, a little from column B. We'll have to see.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we normally ask you a question and then you answer it. But this week, we are belatedly getting to the title of the year results. This is something we do every year, and people are very patient as we indulge in this self-indulgent thing. But yeah, people vote, and the weird shit that we say gets ranked based on those votes. Let's start with the ATOTY results, and let's do the top five of those. ATOTYs are, so if you listen to the end of every episode after the credits song, we throw out the titles that we are suggesting before we decide on what the actual title is going to be. The alternate titles are the losers of those, but we still gather all of them up and have people vote. So why don't we get started here? I said the top five without realizing that there were like four of them in the fifth position.
The votes are kind of clustered, so I think what's here is a top 10, but we do everything that got five votes or more, maybe.
It's still the same one. Let's do the top three, because there are four there.
Perfect.
Let's do that. So coming in at number four of the titles that didn't win, is I don't know how invested I am in that weird horny lady, which I have no recollection of the context.
It has to be a Jala quote, right? That has to be a Jala.
Maybe. Maybe. It could be me because I'm skeptical of horny. number
four. If only we had a recording, we could go back and check.
Number four. David, what is number four?
Number four is Dong Slider.
Which is just us saying a feature in Cyberpunk.
Yep. Yeah. I still like Dong Slider.
I mean, lots of people like Dong Sliders. Who are we to judge?
It's not my place. Ben, what is number two here?
Walking backward into the sexiest thing imaginable.
Yeah, I think I forgot to write the T. Yes, the horny ones. People like the horny.
This is where we go on a 30-minute diversion on the difference between horny and sexy.
Yes.
Just assume that was edited out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, one is
one is the stimulus, the other is the reaction. Right? Yeah, one yeah. is the stimulus, the other is the reaction. Yeah. Let's see here, and then Dennis, what is number one?
Yeah, number one is until I had acquired more white people.
Again, I forget the I used to be better at remembering the context.
So no, this one I do remember.
Yeah, this one was Jala discussing not understanding some element of pop culture.
Oh, okay. So her talking about growing up, and then like there were things that she just wasn't aware of until she had more white people around. Okay, there we go. That makes more sense to me now. Mm.
I like the implication here that we are all just like collectors' items in Jala's. We are the Pokemon in Jala's. In Jala's life.
Yeah. Let's do these other ones here real quick. And by the other ones, I mean the actual toadies.
Yeah, out of the Apocrypha.
Yes, out of the Apocrypha into this. But number one is a tie between until I had acquired more white people and walking backward into the sexiest thing imaginable. Now moving into the actual toadies. Let's do these pretty quick until we get to the top five. Starting off with position number 10, we have It's a Me Problem. So that is Mario working on his self-awareness there. Let's see, David, what is number nine?
I'm also nursing a theme in the ones I guess.
I'm literally just going in the same order.
Get your genitalia practicing.
Take it clean. What was that?
Get your genitalia practicing.
Do you remember what the context of that was?
Probably also Cyberpunk.
Maybe you need to practice the dog slider.
Let's see here, Ben. What is number eight?
Look dumb, feel cool.
That was me describing virtual reality. That was after I got my Oculus Quest. Yeah.
I feel like I want that eye.
Dennis, how about number seven?
Number seven is Days Since I've Cried Clock.
Oh man, I totally initially read that as Days Since I've Cried Clock. Like an exclamation point. That was after they're talking about the Final Fantasy VII remake.
This is important. I don't know if I was there for this one. Maybe I was. Was it a Days Since I've Cried clock, like a clock that tracks how long since you've cried, or is it how many days since you've cried clock?
Oh, that's what I said. No, this is the how many days since you've cried clock.
Okay, so it is officially the former.
No, right. just repeating the sentence doesn't answer it at all.
Let's see here. Going into number six, we have Floof with double umlaut O's. Now we're getting to the top five. This is the this is the cream of the crop. Although my favorite is not anyone here. Floof.
I will always be in love that it makes two little paws.
Oh, that is so true. Huh. David, what is number five?
Number five is This Machine Kills Yoshis.
That had to be talking about Super Mario Maker 2.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, there we go. Yeah. Makes more sense now. God, this that is fun. Ben, what is number four?
I want to say that I don't support number four, but it's don't be a Dave.
That was Jala talking. I forget what Dave did, or like Dave in the audience did something.
I want to say it was her Dave.
Yeah, I can't recall. But just a real warning shot across to all the Daves out there. Better shape up.
Choose nurture over nature.
Dennis, what is number three?
Number three is When God Nukes a Door. Which I believe is the continual improvement of Fallout 76.
Maybe, yes. Possibly. let's see. Number two here is a recent one. Yeet the Kayak, referring to the kayak launcher at Clear Fork Reservoir in sunny Mansfield, Ohio.
Just as a pleasing series of words, Yeet the Kayak is
it's a palindrome. Not everybody realizes that. and then David, it falls to you to read number one.
I'll be wrong over here with my hammer.
What was that in relation to?
Oh gosh. Was it in the vein of when every problem looks like a, or when all you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail?
Maybe.
I vaguely remember I was judging someone for favoring the hammer as a weapon in something.
Yeah.
Oh, that's no. Yeah. Okay. No, this was the favoring the big fuck off two-handed hammer.
Was this Deep Rock Galactic?
No, I think it was Kingdoms of Amalur. Like, not that we played it, but it came up in conversation about in RPGs. Yeah. I always love playing with just the giant hammer.
Maybe.
Yeah, because in Kingdoms of Amalur, there's two types of people. You know, people who choose the chakram and people who are wrong.
Yeah.
That's the quote.
Alternately, it could be Vermintide, except that I tend to roll hammer fairly often.
I'm trying to see here. No, so looking at this... The games discussed: For the King, Valorant, Middle-Earth, Shadow of War, Just Cause 4, Dead Rising 4, Deep Rock Galactic, Picross, and then the Dread X Collection.
No, so, I'm almost certain it was some ancillary Amalur that got this quote in.
Yeah. Huh. Well, but that is the title of the year. I'll be wrong over here with my hammer. Does anybody have any favorites that got snubbed? I mean, for me, like, absolutely, it is Bioshock.
Yeah, that's...
That's pretty good.
I have a soft spot in my heart for Oblospherophobia.
Mm-hmm.
But I could not bring myself to rank it very high in my own ranking. So I wish it was higher, but it wasn't even for me. But it feels like it should have been.
Yeah.
Throw one out for Ambulance.
it's just riding around but it's riding around town, but instead of playing a siren, it just blasts that one album by Aphex Twin. That very good ambient album they did. Do you have a snubbed favorite, David?
I want to point out that Bioshock, I kind of am disappointed that this is presumably Shaquille O'Neal, not like Radio Shack, except for, you know, your wetware.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I want to point out Dennis did not choose Congratulations, Dennis and Jen.
Oh, that feels self-serving, but I do appreciate everyone who voted for it.
Yeah,
I do kind of like the rhythm of you know, knocked out, knocked up, or knocked off.
Oh yeah, talking about Crusader Kings 3. Yeah. That was waiting right out the door at number 11 or number 12.
Yeah, describing Crusader Kings and the darkest corners of, you know, 4chan.
Yeah, depressing. Well, thank you everybody who voted, and also to everybody who listened to us discuss this. I trust us, it won't happen again for another year, but we have fun doing it, so we're gonna do it. So
I said it in the poll description, but thank you for letting us wring one last bit of joy out of the god awful 2020.
Yes.
This redeems nothing, but it is a little bit of joy.
Yeah. And next week, watch for a prompt to go up in the usual place, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Thank you, Dennis, for creating the poll and tabulating the results. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I switched over to Google Surveys or Google Forms, whatever their platform is this year, and never again. It did not export very well. So,
oh, ooh.
Yeah. Well, see ya on SurveyMonkey. The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting or notable. I would like to bring a pretty uplifting story. So a typhoon back in September here recently in 2020 knocked over a part of the Watatsumi Shrine on Tsushima Island. Its arch was knocked over, and, you know, shrines don't make an awful lot of money. Would have cost a lot of money to repair. So they put up a crowdfunding site, thinking, hey, let's see what we can get out of this. Turns out people who really like the 2020 samurai open world game Ghost of Tsushima really want to support this shrine that features prominently in the game. So people from all over the world put together 27 million yen, or roughly 260. Hey, Dottie, can you chill the fuck out for a second? Thank you.
This is the time to call out that the fifth Atody of the year was, God damn it, Dottie.
Sorry. No, 27 million yen, or 260,000 US dollars, five times the original goal. Like, they just came through and said, like, hey, we like this shrine in the game. Here you go. So an important religious and historical site was not only restored back to its former glory, or, you know, given the resources to be restored back to its former glory, but also has, you know, a good amount of, let's say, walking around money. All from people who like who liked the game. So
pimp my shrine.
It's pretty great. I think that is a really heartwarming story.
Yeah.
Yeah. I
agree.
So, I don't know. Just wanted to put that there. Hey, Dottie, for fucking real, okay? Hey.
This is a reminder that the internet can do really good things.
It can, yes. Among all the bad things it does, which... Oh no, that would be a transition to David's. let's just do that. Hey David, what's going on with Fallout 76?
So this one actually isn't a bad thing exactly, although it seems like
it's related to unpleasantness that's happening in the real world, but ultimately it came out.
Yes. Now. So in Fallout 76, one of the faction, the Free States Militia, which previously controlled Harper's Ferry and a more or less kind of a satirical take on the militia movement.
Mm-hmm.
Probably most notable in that they have like the just about the only vendor in the next to the last zone, and it just spits like constant anti-communist propaganda at you while you're trying to shop.
Okay.
Which is fairly entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a group of players that are really into one of the role-playing servers that role-play as the members of the Free States Militia.
Mm.
But unfortunately, their Facebook page keeps getting shut down from the... various algorithms that are trying to, catch and regulate, real world crazy militias.
Yeah, all the insurrectionists. Yeah.
So, so that, that happened to them, and they're currently trying to transition to Discord. Mm-hmm. And, taking it perfectly in character are doing so while loudly decrying, my rights.
Of course.
Huh. I that's really all there is to a story. It's just kind of this fun group of people that are apparently really involved in the Fallout 76 kind of roleplay community. Hmm. Kind of having some kerfluffles.
Yeah, it's weird. Like it's too little too late, but like these services going and pushing like QAnon people off, like, and militia is a good thing, but also they're applying the cleaver instead of the scalpel. So like anti QAnon and anti militia stuff gets swept up too. Like this is a separate issue from like actual leftist groups being banned because of like both sides kind of stuff. But like, oh, our podcast is called QAnon Anonymous, and just every couple of months, our official account and everybody associated with the podcast is going to be banned because they just did a search and ban with no regard to the context, and we have to petition to get our accounts back.
Right. And unfortunately, social media is kind of notorious for not having effective, petition things. Like the stereotypical thing is just, kind of being told, algorithm says no.
Yeah, well, what, you want us to hire people? We're not gonna hire people, come on.
Money machine, not a money people.
Ben, what's Epic doing?
Yeah, I have two small ones. One is that Rad Game Tools got bought out by Epic, so they're gonna start integrating those with the Unreal Engine, which is cool.
Okay. What is Rad Game Tools? I take it they're rad, but
yeah, it's something that I actually don't know too much about. The programmers that I stream on Twitch either have worked there or speak highly of the people who work there. So I hold it in high regard without knowing much about it.
Okay.
But if you go to the Wikipedia page, it just directs you to Bink Video, which is in a lot of different games in the last 10 years. I know specifically it's like in the Batman games. I think it's most of EB games. But they just make gaming tools for people to use. So it's specifically with like video and cutscene performance and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so that's fun. There's one other story that's small and I don't really know much about it, but Bethesda announced that they were going to make an Indiana Jones game today.
Oh, dang, that's, really?
That's all I know about it. Huh. There's a trailer, light Indiana Jones music in the trailer. It's 30 seconds long.
Is this a movie tie-in? Because I feel like I heard there's another Indiana Jones movie coming.
Yes,
there is supposedly another movie.
Yeah. So my hopes for the game just went down markedly, knowing that it's tie-in with the movie.
So there was some fun discussion on the Slack. Two kind of dueling discussions of one, like, what is the best Indiana Jones games that have been made so far? And then also, what would be the most fun, like, genres and such for this? So, for example, I would pitch, I would love to see a Indiana Jones, like, Soulsborne game.
Mm-hmm. You can get whips in Dark Souls.
All the people you fight are the big guy from Raiders of the Lost.
Oh, man. I should take this opportunity. I was recently on an episode of Retronauts about Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, the 90s LucasArts adventure game. If you want to go and check that out, that, like, I think literally this week just went up on their public feed. So
nice.
Yeah.
I actually like the idea of like trying to shoehorn getting an aircraft carrier kill the bad guy and just try and do that over and over again in a video game. To lead them to the local airfield.
Okay, stand here while this plane turns around. Dennis, what's happening in Phasmophobia?
Yeah, I picked this story mostly because I want to hear Ben talk about it, but the gist of it is there's a feature that so many people thought was in Phasmophobia that they added it to Phasmophobia. specifically that talking too loud will actually draw the ghost towards you. Mm. Apparently that was never actually in the game, although people kind of assumed it was. And now they are updating the game to include that, so that ghosts, as they leave and roam and go hunting, which I know is a bigger deal at higher difficulty levels. I've never I've stuck to the easy world, but it will actually select targets based on who is talking too much, which is a really cool, interesting idea for the in-world kind of fiction of the game. Like, that makes total sense, but I feel like the way most people engage in Phasmophobia, it's actually a detriment, because this is a little bit of an Among Us kind of hangout game. I'd love, Ben, your thoughts on, like, now that everyone needs to be quiet to not draw the ghost, does that put a damper on things, or is that cool?
We're on Discord, so it's not gonna affect us at all.
that is fair.
Yeah.
See, I like the idea that this would just result in all of the streamers that do the like fake screams getting killed.
It lines up with horror movies too, because like the smart ass or the talkative guy or the person who panics and yells is usually the person who gets caught first.
I would like to understand the logic of the ghost when it's hunting better, because like there's times where I'm in a closet and it doesn't get me even though it's right outside. There's times when it comes right through and kills me, and likewise well, with someone.
One of the ghost's ability is that it can go through closets,
right? I know, but I feel like it's happened with other ghost types besides that one. I think it's the wraith is the one that goes through walls.
This comes back to, I think, half the appeal of Phasmophobia is that the AI of the ghost is arcane and it doesn't work every time. And it feels unpredictable, which again lines up well with the thematic supernatural that you're interacting with.
Yeah. And it brings back
I just want more spooks in the game. There was one thing I saw like later after it was released where there's like this, like almost like a cutscene where a ghost was knocking at the front door and like lights were flicking on and off. You'd open the door and there's nothing there. And then the door would slam shut. It would knock on the door again. And it was like, It was like a horror movie.
Nice. Do we know if that team got any bigger, or if it's still just one guy? It has to have gotten bigger. Right? Dude. Wow.
It's one dude and his ghost.
And his many, many ghosts. Nice. Well, that seems like an episode. Go ahead.
Dude, his demons and his demons.
How do you guys feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in, for listening to this episode of The Level. I greatly appreciate it. Nothing too special is going on, like to promote or anything like that, so you know the usual stuff to do. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. You can leave ratings or reviews. There's Patreon. Tell your friends, all of that good stuff, and most of all, come back next week. Am I forgetting anything? Okay. Until next time.
Our light load for you should free you up to go make an impact in the real world, which needs your help.
Yes, desperately. I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckFeedTV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Twitter at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words.
I'm David Meismith. You can find me on Twitter because I'm not a terrorist.
I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles. This is where toadies and day toadies are born, folks.
That's right.
So I've got a number, although this might need edited down or whatever.
Okay.
So I have Satisfaustery.
I also have Satisfaustery. I also have Satisfaustery. Yeah.
I have I'm skeptical of horny. And I had like five from this section. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I have people like the horny. this one is somewhat kind of manufactured. I don't think this was ever literally said, but I've sexy is the symptom, horny is the action. Last one from that category. So then after that I had Dottie, can you chill the frack out?
Okay.
And we're a money machine, not a money people.
Okay. Cool. Ben, what you got?
I got Satisfaustery, and I got Don't Think Too Much About a Game You Played Not to Think.
Wow, novels.
Wide wisdom.
Yeah. I liked that. I couldn't stylize it down to title length. I have... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, perhaps you shouldn't.
I'm still typing it. Okay, good.
My hand is cramping. I have Satisfaustery as well.
Okay.
Strong preference for that one. I have Spoiler Alert.
I also, spoiler alert,
just no way to spell it differently. I have Ancillary Amalur. and then I have Pimp My Shrine.
I feel like that the, you know, thinking one reminds me of the whole Destiny, you know, I don't have time to think about why I don't have time to think.
let's see. And Ben, what do you have?
I already said my two.
You did. Wait, okay. You cool? I had Satisfoustery, and spoiler alert, has to be Satisfoustery, because yeah. We all four of us went for it.
I was gonna say, I said my two titles so long ago from you having to type it out that you forgot that I said it.
I really feel like, though, this is now making me realize I want someone to make one of these like factory building games, except have it be like full on the occult.
Is that there what was Cult Simulator, isn't there? I mean, that's not
oh yeah, but that thing, is but a him. That is a great game that you should play. However, that is a very different sort of game.
You want Newt Eye Extractors.
Yeah.
Well, no, I'm saying like I want straight up like, you know, cover a world with you know, factories, except I want, instead of it being conveyor belts, I want like, I don't know, imps flying from thing to thing and,
you want a Satisfactory mod. We can do that.
Making dark, dark packs to optimize my machinery and whatnot.
This will sound like a joke that I'm making because I'm saying the name of a funny title of a game, but like what I interpreted was like, I want Satisfactory, but I am building the machine for pigs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm going to go because I've got to start getting the cats wound down. I need to put the food bowl away so that Dottie doesn't eat. And
yeah.
Yeah. Good luck. That's going to make Greta really upset because Greta will also be fasting while Dottie is.
Yeah.
Because
the sacrifices we make for our kids.
Yep.
Ben, I'm going to go grab Barrett and potentially watch you play XCOM Chimera Squad. I don't know if you're going to do that.
Yeah, tonight. I'm going to make some dinner and I'll be ready in like 20 minutes probably.
Cool. Just at me on Discord.
Yeah, I'll send you a message.
Cool. Take care. Take care, all. Cool.
See you guys.
Bye.